There was nothing for him in England.
There were no homes for heroes. Oh no, no homes for heroes.
My grandmother said this indignantly, and if my mother was there, she used to shake her head and join in.
There was nothing. No, nothing.
They were talking about my grandfather, who had worked in Venezuela after the war. My grandparents lived out there for 8 years in the Shell Oil Company camp on the eastern shore of Lake Maracaibo. The house, a company house, was a large, well-appointed cabin on stilts. I remember various souvenirs of their time in Ven dotted around my grandmother's flat. There were maracas and the fruit bowl, and on the mantelpiece over the gas fire, two painted wooden bookends in the shape of men drowsing under sombreros. They sat back to back, with their arms crossed and their faces hidden. The photo albums lived under the coffee table. Here were pictures of the colony club and the tennis courts, of my grandparents' beaming American friends. My grandfather had been the photographer, but the perspective was a shared one, I think, on all of these unexpected things that had been theirs. There were very few pictures of my grandmother. There were pages of shots that were more sky than land, silvery grey but somehow pulsing with glamorous heat. My mother was born in February 1949 in the hospital Coromoto. They called her Helen after my grandfather's mother, but she renamed herself effectively when her first attempts to pronounce that name produced instead a proud, high
Hen.
My grandmother had thrilled to that, taking the fault as an audacity which had naturally left her helpless. So that Helen was Hen, the resolute Hen, the remarkable Hen.
"I get stopped every few yards,"
she used to tell me of their daily trips to the commissary.
"She was just darling. Everybody said so."
She had been clever too. My grandmother and my mother were both keen to stress that, how she had always been top of the class. It was in her teens, back in England, that her purchase seemed to slip. Her A-levels were a struggle, and then she failed the first year of her teaching course very badly. As per my grandmother again, they had to beg,
just beg,
for her to be allowed to retake those exams. For her part, my mother told me she just went mad, being away from home in London and free to do what she wanted.
"I just went wild. I just went mad," she said.
And if you can remember the 60s, then you weren't there. I don't think anyone really imagined Hen would make a teacher, least of all her. Going to teacher training college was just what people did, she used to tell me indignantly. She was a secretary. Later, she moved back up north and retrained in IT. She worked at Royal Insurance in Liverpool for nearly 30 years, in an ugly building, an assemblage of dirty yellow blocks with arrow slit windows, which she and her colleagues were encouraged to call the sand. Chapter 2. I can't know what my mother was like at work. It's still hard to imagine or guess. She maintained that she hated her job.
"Everybody hates the job, Bridge," she used to say. "Everybody does."
Later, after she'd retired, she told me that going into the office used to make her feel sick.
"Absolutely sick to my stomach, yes."
"Why?" I asked.
"It just wasn't me,"
she said, frowning. It was the same with where we lived. That wasn't her either. She just wasn't a suburbs person, she used to say, with a shake of her head. Still, there she was, in the house with the dark bay window, with the hydrangea bush by the bins. That what my mother did or had done was what everybody did or what people did was sovereign, that it was normal. She would pronounce that word with urgent emphasis. Other considerations didn't get much room. Her antipathy to her circumstances was no spur to change. I think it was the opposite, in a way, back then.